Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 6. Prahlad instructs his demoniac schoolmates, text number 17 to 18. We're only going to read 17, at least recite it. Hito nai kaschit kvacha kutrasidva. Dinak swam atmanam alam samartaha. Vimuchitum kama drisham vihara. Kridam rigo yan nigado visargaha. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. Well, let's just read the first word for word. Yata, because. Na, never. Kaschit, anyone. Kwa, in any place. Cha, also. Kutrachit, at any time. Va, or dina, having a poor fund of knowledge. Swam, own. Atmanam, self. Alam, exceedingly. Samartaha, able. Vimuchitum, to liberate. Kama drisham, of lusty women. Vihara, in the sexual enjoyment. Kridamriga, a playboy. Yat, in whom. Nigada, which is the shackle of material bondage. Visargaha, the expansions of family relationships. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear friends, O sons of the demons, it is certain that no one bereft of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been able to liberate himself from material bondage at any time or in any country. Rather, those bereft of knowledge of the Lord are bound by the material laws. They are factually addicted to sense gratification, and their target is woman. Indeed, they are actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. Victimized by such a conception of life, they become surrounded by children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and thus they are shackled to material bondage. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons. Therefore, although you are the sons of demons, keep aloof from such persons, take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, the origin of all the demigods. Because the ultimate goal for the devotees of Narayana is liberation from the bondage of material existence. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj has maintained the philosophical point of view that one should give up the dark well of family life and go to the forest to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hidvatmapatam griham andakupam vanam gatoya dharim ashrayeta. In this verse also, he stresses the same point. In the history of human society, no one at any time or any place has been liberated because of too much affection and attachment for his family. Even those who are apparently very educated, the same family attachment is there. One cannot give up the association of their families, even in old age or invalidity, for they are attached to sense enjoyment. As we have several times discussed, in Maitu Naidi, Grihamedi Sukham Hitu Cham. So-called householders are simply attracted by sexual enjoyment. Thus, they keep themselves shackled in family life. And furthermore, they want their children to be shackled in the same way. Playing the part of playboys in the hands of women They glide down to the darkest regions of material existence. Adanta Gobhira Vishitam Tamizram Punak Punas Charvita Charvinanam. Because they are unable to control their senses, they continue a life of chewing the chewed, and therefore descend to the darkest material regions. One should give up the association of such demons and adhere to the association of devotees. Thus one will be able to be liberated from material bondage. One may wonder if this is really a theme in material life, that one could be liberated from by sense enjoyment. But actually it's quite a popular theory. There was one such person, his name was Osho? Rajneesh. You've heard of Rajneesh? Who has heard of Rajneesh? You never heard of Rajneesh? Osho. He was Bhagavan Rajneesh. He founded this society called the, what do they call them? What's that? Rajneeshis or something? Anyhow, he was from India. He was quite popular in Europe and in America. And also had their centers in Europe. His theories, he was a brahmachari. And he was a very famous brahmachari. But a little proud. So he put advertisements in big Indian newspapers that he challenged any prostitute in India to have him fall down. So one famous prostitute came to Bombay where he was living and challenged him. So she said, I'll spend the night with you. So the next day he wrote an article called Liberation from Sex. So this is the common idea in the material existence, that sex is spiritual. And that somehow or another you're being liberated. Because the Tevidu Swarthikatim Hivishnu, they don't know what the actual liberation is, because they don't know who they are. Actually, they are being liberated from material desire for 5 seconds. Before it comes back stronger. And then they want to become liberated from the stronger material desire. And perpetually the material desires are increasing. And their happiness is temporarily getting relieved from that anxiety caused by material desire. Yehi samsparsha bhoga dukkha yone evate adyantavante kondiya nate shuramate buddha. The one who's Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. An intelligent person, he's not attracted to material sense pleasures or material sense objects because he knows they have a beginning and an end, and so the wise person doesn't delight in them. But people don't know of any other happiness except for that happiness, and therefore that's the only thing they have for happiness. On the other hand, Krishna also says in many preceding verses, which we won't go over all of them, but we can start with the verse where Krishna says, Tad buddhyas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayanaha gachanya puna arvitim jnana nirduta kalmashaha. Tad buddhyas. So one's intelligence, spiritual intelligence begins with understanding that we're not this body. If we don't understand we're not this body, then we have no intelligence, no spiritual intelligence. We may have intelligence, but every living entity has intelligence how to try to enjoy the material nature. And some living entities have much more intelligence than human beings in this regard. If you want to eat raw, many people are into eating raw nowadays. But the expert person, living entity who eats raw, has a completely raw diet, is the tiger. So if you want to learn how to eat raw, learn from the tiger. We never find tigers cooking. Matter of fact, most of the animals are raw. And if you want to be a raw vegetarian, then become like a cow or a goat, because goats eat other things. But anyhow, a cow. Generally speaking, if they're left to their own, they eat completely raw diet and vegetarian it also. Fresh. If they can, they get they eat. If they could eat, they'd eat 100% fresh or organic diet, a cow. Raw food diet. So human beings' intelligence is not to become a raw food expert. Human beings' intelligence is to understand what's the difference between oneself and one's body and mind and false ego. So that requires intelligence. But we know intelligence is taken away by sense gratification. Now, as soon as there is lust, when they identify the lust, and stop there. It is not that one is obliged to serve lust. One may be lusty, but one can regulate the lust also. Krishna says, Apuryamana machala pratisham samudram apa pravishanti advat tadvat kamiyam pravishanti sarve sashantimat noti nakama kami. There will be desires flowing through our minds as long as we're conditioned. As long as we're not absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then the desires will keep on flowing. Even when one comes to a platform, a higher platform of nishta, it doesn't mean that the desires stop flowing. It means that one stops flowing with the desires. The problem is not the desires flowing through our mind. The problem is our attachment to the desires. They're flowing through the mind. Otherwise, they're going to come and go. So it takes intelligence to recognize what desires are to be fulfilled and what desires aren't to be fulfilled. But as soon as one becomes attached to lusty desires, one should recognize it with intelligence, and then with intelligence, not keep on flowing with those desires. Instead, try to withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self, Krishna says. So that takes practice and experience. On the other hand, if lust comes to greed, then one has to also learn, now I'm in the stage of greed, so this is even more dangerous. Yellow lights are flashing. And so now I have to stop this greedy mentality. And then one will realize that the root cause of that is lust. And because of that lust, one is propelled towards greed, and from greed will come anger. So one has to recognize these different stages of material absorption. Lust means I want to become the controller. I want to become the enjoyer. And greed means I really want to be, I'm really serious about becoming the controller and enjoyer. I'll do anything to become the controller and enjoyer. Anger means somehow or another my desire to become the controller and enjoyer is becoming frustrated. So now I want to become the destroyer. If I can't enjoy, at least I can destroy. And meanwhile, these emotions of lust, anger, and greed are all just puffing up our illusion, because we're living in this bubble of illusion anyhow. They're just all adding to the reservoir of illusion that we're floating around in. And when we don't stop these things, then we start forgetting. We're forgetting who we actually are. We start forgetting what we've actually experienced. And then we lose our intelligence. So one can wonder why someone like Daksha Maharaj. Daksha Maharaj was a great Prajapati. He was so powerful due to his austerities that when he walked into the assembly of the demigods, Lord Shiva was there, Lord Brahma was there, Lord Vishnu didn't come. But all the great demigods were there, and Daksha walked in, and he was so effulgent that all the demigods, except for Shiva and Brahma, they stood up to pay him obeisances, pay him respect. Of course, he offended Lord Shiva because he was envious. people are not Krishna conscious, then they want fully Krishna conscious, then they become envious of anyone who doesn't respect them. Daksha could forgive Brahma because Brahma was his father, but Shiva was his brother, and he expected some respect for him because Shiva was married to his daughter, so he became the son-in-law. And the son-in-law in Vedic culture is supposed to respect the father-in-law. In any case, without going into the history of the story, he got his head cut off and replaced with that of a goat. And if you're such a powerful personality, it's quite embarrassing. You look at yourself in the mirror and go, my God, do I really look like that? In any case, he gave up his body, because he was quite pious, he came back in a future time, again as Daksha, a little less powerful, but still as a Prajapati. This time, again, he understood, because anyone who's intelligent, he understood that the process of becoming powerful and getting what you want is not to just grab for it. You may get what you want by grabbing for it, but then you're going to have to suffer the reaction for it. So he performed austerity, great austerity, and what part of his austerity was chanting these mantras to Lord Vishnu, praising Lord Vishnu, which is the greatest of all the austerities. Get the most quick and most dramatic results. So Lord Vishnu being pleased, he came riding in the back of Garuda with 8 arms, I believe, along with all the demigods. Not every one of them, but many of the principal demigods came with him. And Daksha was so ecstatic because Vishnu, he emanates ecstasy. The whole atmosphere becomes surcharged with ecstasy wherever he is. Became so ecstatic that he had to sit on the ground. And then Lord Vishnu said, yes, you've been performing such nice austerity. What can I do for you? So here, he's in a state of ecstasy, illuminated, but he asked, because his desire was a lusty desire, not illegal lusty desire, but his desire was to produce children, and for that one has to be lusty. So he said, I want unlimited power to produce children. So Lord Vishnu said, so be it. He could have asked for liberation, pure Krishna consciousness, but his intention was lusty, and therefore no matter how much ecstasy he was under, still the intention was there, and therefore his intelligence was always unclear. And he asked for some insignificant boon, but dutiful to propagate in this universe. Dutiful boon. So, unless one is clear, has a clear intention to get rid of lust, to get free from lording it over the material nature, then even when one is in ecstasy in Krishna consciousness, still the ecstasy will be limited, so that the lust will not disappear and one will act in order to fulfill that lust and come back to the lower modes of nature. Now, as I mentioned here, household life, Krishna consciousness is not against household life, but it's against ignorant household life. That household life is an opportunity to regulate sense desire and at the same time cultivate Krishna consciousness. If one has no opportunity to fulfill one's desires, then they'll simply grow, because material nature is mostly, the attraction is all in the proposal and the idea more than the experience. The experience may be relatively insignificant, but the idea is quite attractive. Romanticism is, people sing about it, how romantic everything could be, how much love the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon above and the thing called love. So, the desire produces expectations and great longing and etc., great imagination. But the final outcome is quite insignificant. It's like the Himalayas were about to give birth, and they were shaking. The Himalayas are quite big, so all the animals from the forest came to find out what the Himalayas were going to give birth to. And there was so much noise and everything, and they were expecting something wonderful to come out. And then the Himalayas gave birth, and a little tiny mouse came out. So that's material existence. There's a lot of expectation and little actual experience. But then one forgets, because that's the nature of material existence. The illusion is built up and is partly dissipated. Tuchavat is considered insignificant. But still, next moment one forgets. As soon as one tries to satisfy one's lusty desires, greed and anger and illusion will cause one to forget. And one actually starts imagining again how wonderful it could be, or how wonderful it was, or maybe we could just make it a little bit better. And then one loses one's intelligence, because if one can't look into the experience and see it objectively, then if one doesn't have that intelligence, then one will lose it. In other words, Krishna consciousness is an opportunity to gain that intelligence and look back with memory, try to regain one's memory and think about what the actual result was and whether it was actually what I was expecting, whether it was beneficial, and what were the consequences of such an activity. If you ever saw that, there was an advertisement for drinking water. I don't know if anyone has ever seen it. Something about if you drink this water, their motto, if you drink the water, you become enlightened or something. Did anyone ever see that advertisement? Yeah, anyhow, maybe it was an American advertisement. Devotees were sending it around. Because there's this cowboy, and he's on a horse, and he hears this crying, help, help, help. And then he goes to the cliff, and he sees this beautiful young girl is hanging from the cliff. And he said, don't worry, I'll save you. And the girl winks at him. And then he goes to get his rope from his horse. And before he does that, he takes this brand of water and drinks it. And he gets enlightened. And then he sees, you know, he marries this girl. And then, you know, he has on his lap this little baby, you know, and he's feeding the little baby, and his mother-in-law comes in. She's, you know, old mother-in-law, yelling at him or something like that, complaining to him. And his wife comes in with another baby, and he thinks, my God. And so he puts the bottle of water in his saddle, he puts the rope back, and he rides off. We don't recommend that. He could have saved the girl and and said goodbye. But anyhow, this was enlightenment. So it means that if we hear intelligence, then we can understand how to act properly. Then our memory won't be dissipated, and we'll get free from illusion. Now, for most people, if one is in the brahmachari life, then one is living partly in Krishna consciousness and partly in a lot of an illusion, thinking how wonderful it could be. Or as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, which I just forgot what he said, the first Sanskrit word. That's why we have books. Karmendriyani samyamya yasta manase smaran indriyartam vimudatma vityacharasa uchite. One who restrains the senses and organs of action but whose mind dwells on sense objects certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Yasva atmitya evasya yasva indriyani manasa niyamya yevritejana karmendriya karma yogam asakta safishishite. On the other hand, one who restrains his senses and fixes them upon Krishna, that's a different word. One who follows, restrains his senses, that's the first thing. If a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga, Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So household life is meant for that, so that one can practice controlled sense enjoyment, regulated sense enjoyment, and at the same time try to cultivate Krishna consciousness, so that one will eventually see the wife and children in relationship to Krishna, the husband in relationship to Krishna, the house in relation with the Krishna, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, manasadeho geho yo kichu mora arpilituya pade nandi kishora. That my manasadeho, my mind, my body, yo kichu manasadeho yo kichu mora. What's the next one? Manasadeho. What's the next one? What's that? Well, that's at the end. Manasadeho yo kitu moro. So my, oh yeah, that's right. Manasadeho yo kitu moro. That my mind, my body, and whatever else I may have, this I'm offering to you, Nanda Kushora. So that's the idea. That eventually one will understand, one will act dutifully in relationship to the husband, wife, children, etc. And one will see everything as Krishna's property, and do what Krishna wants one to do. It is not that there won't be any affection, but actually real affection begins in Krishna consciousness. If one actually loves Krishna, one actually loves all other living entities. Sense gratification is not love. It's simply very superficial enjoyment. But actual love means that one will actually love the family and act as a perfect instrument for the family, whatever Krishna wants. So family life is meant to be trained like that, so that when one takes sannyas or vanaprastha, then one will actually spend the time hearing and chanting about Krishna rather than playing tennis and shuffleboard. And one will become further trained up, so the wife goes home and instructs the children, educates them in Krishna consciousness, and the husband goes and preaches Krishna, pure love of God, and gets further advance in austerity, and so does the wife. So that's Vedic civilization. All men to regulate sense gratification in one of the ashrams or another, so that eventually one can become perfectly Krishna conscious. So household life, grihastha life, is not condemned in Krishna consciousness. It's a stage which is appropriate for some, but grihamedi life is inappropriate for everyone. And dwelling on sense objects rather than Krishna is also inappropriate. The whole idea is to fix the mind on Krishna, not to imagine oneself to be the enjoyer and then try to externally present oneself as renounced. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I wanted to ask, because Queen Kunti, when she's praying also to get rid of the attachment to her kinsmen, the Yadavas and the Pandavas, etc. So I was wondering, why was she doing that? Because they were all devotees, and that's her family. Was she kind of getting into Vanaprastha kind of sannyas, or is it something else?
Well, when she's saying getting rid of the attachment, she wasn't saying get rid of the children. She wasn't saying getting rid of the family. Because that's a pure devotee always doesn't think themselves to be great devotees. They think themselves to be conditioned souls, sometimes.
Why was she trying to get rid of the attachment for the devotees? Because her sons were devotees.
Well, she was talking about material attachment, not spiritual attachment. She wasn't saying give... please, I love my children, I love, you know, please get rid of the love so I can, I hate them. No, she wants, if there is any material attachment, then she wanted to get rid of it so that she could purely love Krishna and love them also in relation to Krishna. But she was playing a role. If they were all playing the role of Mahabhagavats, we wouldn't have the Mahabharata. It would be quite, there wouldn't be nothing, you know. They might as well just take on their roles in the spiritual world. And even in the spiritual world, they play roles. So these are for pastimes.
You mentioned, sorry, that there is so there is material attachment for devotees also?
No, you could be materially attached to the devotee, so-called, but you could also be spiritually attached to the devotee. Spiritual attachment is prema, material attachment is material desire, material conception.
When you see devotees as way to fulfill your material desires, then it's a material attachment.
Yeah, of course. Anytime we want to fulfill material desires, that's the difference between material and spiritual. Actually, everything is spiritual. It's our consciousness that becomes material. Anything else? Okay, well, we'll wait here another 15 minutes, and if there's no question, we'll see if... No. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.